Have you hesitated to negotiate a higher salary because you're worried your prospective employer will say no? A University of Cincinnati marketing professor says women are more likely to answer yes to that question and can be their own biggest roadblocks as a result. You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss this are UC marketing professor and author of the book Women and Power, Your Guidebook to Risk, Resilience, and Confidence, Jane Ziegler-Soyka, Director of UC's Corporate Law Center, Neil Taylor, and two UC graduates, Hannah Markle and Emily McDonough. Thank you all so much for being here.
Thank you for inviting us. I'm glad to be here.
Thank you.
Jane and Neil, I know you both had careers in the corporate world before working for universities. Jane, tell us a little bit about the work you did and some of what you experienced in the male-dominated industry where you worked.
This was a long time ago, okay? So I was the first and only woman manager in a corporate, a Fortune 500 company. And it was rough. I did what I could do, but it was one of those. It was at the time when you kind of checked the box. Okay, we got one woman in. Check the box. We're done. And so the men didn't really accept me because wait, she's a manager, and I was working on my MBA, and I did good work, and eventually it won them over. But you know, they were like, well, she's not one of us. And the women were like, how did she get it and not me? Which is legitimate, and because there was only could be one of us, and so it was a challenge.
Yeah, Neil, what kinds of challenges did you see women encounter, either as a supervisor or I know you also did corporate training?
I mean, I think what I saw was very similar to what Jane was saying, is that there were a few women in positions of power, but not nearly enough. And it was, you know, it was almost like they were unicorns, and some of them, to be successful, felt like they needed to act like the men instead of being their authentic selves. And I think over the course of my career, that has changed for the better quite a lot. I don't think we're anywhere near where we need to get to, but it has gotten better.
Yeah. Jane, I know your experience helped inspire your research and a class that you used to teach at UC that ultimately led to this book that you wrote. Why did you come to believe women needed a class and then this guidebook that could really walk them through becoming more confident and resilient?
Wow, that is a great question, and I'm going to try to make it as brief as possible. Basically, I was teaching sales, okay, and you know, sales, and I had really good women, and corporate America wanted a workforce that represented the population, okay? I could not get women to take a sales course, much less take, you know, a career in sales. So I applied for a higher education innovation grant from Procter & Gamble, said, let me experiment. And so, you know, your researchers have a laboratory. I'm a teacher. My classroom is my laboratory. And said, well, what would happen if we had a class for women in sales? And all I knew when I started it was that women sold differently than men. And then from that, everything evolved. But I think it kind of came back to your point that you were both making, was that when it's a predominantly male industry, even good men were training me to be like them. And they were well-intended, and I appreciate their efforts. I needed to develop my own style and my own comfortable within my skin, which is different. And that's what I strove to perfect in the Women in Sales course.
Yeah. Emily, I know you took this class when you were a student at UC, and I understand you encouraged your younger brother to take it too. What did you get out of it, and why did you think he could benefit from it?
Yeah, I did. In fact, my brother is 4 years younger than me, and I said, if there's any class that you take at UC while you go through business school, it has to be this class. And, you know, I think looking back on taking this class with Dr. Soyka, yes, of course, you know, it definitely taught me about really leaning into my key strengths as a woman. And I think it's a lot of other women share these key strengths in terms of, you know, being able to listen very intently and asking strong questions, understanding needs, right? And all of that was an awesome new perspective that I had. But I actually think more importantly, and I don't know if Dr. Soyka, you know, fully grasps the impact that this class has had on her students, you know, past this curriculum. And really what this class has taught me is how I show up in business today. And so I've been out of college for 6 years now, and I work in marketing in New York City. And this class single-handedly shaped the foundation of, you know, how I show up in terms of just my own confidence and resiliency. And I'm happy to give some specific examples, but you know, that's definitely, yeah, where, like, how much impact is made. And so when I shared this with my brother, you know, I said, like, you have to take this class. And he's like, women in sales, but I'm a man, right? And I said, exactly, right? Like, you are going to be working with women in your sales career. And I think it is truly a benefit for you to understand how women's strengths are different from yours and how you can work together in the workplace to really accomplish a common goal. Mm-hmm. Last thing, I also think it's incredibly important for men to sometimes feel that they're in a minority, right? Which doesn't happen very often. I think it's incredible for any human being who isn't a minority often to be able to be in that type of environment and get that type of perspective.
Well, Hannah, I know you worked with Jane to create workshops for women athletes at UC. And I think a lot of us think about athletes as being very confident people already. Hannah, why did you feel like women athletes needed this?
Yeah, that's a really great question, Lucy. And that's actually a question that Jane and I spent a lot of time trying to uncover. Funny enough, Emily McDonough also prompted me to take this course. So I went to this class. I sat in the back of the class after cross-country practice in my sweats when everyone else was in business professional. And after each course, I would go back to practice and start taking these like tactical resiliency strengths into my cross-country practice. And I was thinking to myself, like, I'm using the tools that I'm learning in this class that's supposed to be for business in my everyday as a student athlete. How are my teammates feeling when, you know, we inevitably have a bad race or a bad practice? How are we picking ourselves back up? And turns out we haven't really given much thought into what can we actively and tactically do to bounce back from failure quickly. So I met with Dr. Soyka, and together we put together a semester-long Inspire Equip Connect female leadership for student athletes course. And we worked with student athletes in the athletic department to make sure that Dr. Soyka's amazing lessons go beyond theory in the classroom and that we can incorporate it into our respective sports as well as internships, life outside work, or life outside college, excuse me, and then into our workplace once we graduate.
We're talking about the challenges that women can face in the workplace and how to address them. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Jane, I want to get into these strategies and tips that you offer in your guidebook that you used to offer in this class. But first, I want to make something really clear. I mean, there are lots of external factors that cause women to doubt themselves. You say that very clearly in your book. So it's not that these are all problems that women make for themselves. Yet you say there are some self-limiting behaviors that you see repeated among women. Can you talk a little bit about all of that?
Yeah, yes, Lucy. And in fact, Neil and I were having this conversation before we got on the air. I've tried to change the world and I can't do it. I've gotten beaten up. So my strategy now is, if you want to change the world, change yourself. And so I don't, you know, external factors are there. And I think Neil does a great job helping us with those. But in many ways, we, and it's not just women, but men too. And that's a whole nother phase to the book, okay, so that I can talk about the men's input into the book. But we tend to limit ourselves. And so, for example, in fact, the first section of the book is self-limiting behaviors. And two of my personal favorites, perfectionism. You know, we think we have to be perfect, and we think if we're perfect, we're not going to fail. We're so afraid of failing that, okay, let's come up with this strategy. Well, you know what? If you've ever lived with a perfectionist, hi, my name is Jane. I'm a recovering perfectionist. It's miserable to be around. And it's like waiting for Godot. It never comes, okay? And you make everyone miserable around you. And all that does is, well, I'm not going to take a risk. And I'll tell you, I'm not going to take that course because I might not get an A. Well, then you know what? You just cut yourself out of an opportunity. So that's a self-limiting behavior. Another one that's a personal favorite of my current students, people-pleasing. We think that if we make everybody happy, oh, they're not going to let us fail. Well, that's not true. It's not true. Number one, you can't make everybody happy. And you end up losing yourself. And then you don't know what you want. And that's not good. But these are self-limiting behaviors. Nobody goes out and says you have to be, No, we pile this on. And it's got to stop. And there's four more, but that gives you an idea.
Yeah. Well, Neil, there are also women in the workforce who aren't apologetic. Maybe they're a bit more forceful naturally, or they've become more forceful. And they can sometimes be labeled in certain ways, like aggressive or problematic. Have you seen that? How do women cope with that?
I mean, yes, absolutely. You know, a man who is hard driving and aggressive may be referred to as demanding. There will be a different word used for a woman that acts that way. And we need to change that, obviously. I think that Jane is selling herself short. I think she is changing the world. And I think men should read this book, both because you'll see yourself in it. I mean, I'm a people pleaser. I mean, how in the world do I end up on a radio show talking about women and power? It's because someone I respect asked me to do it, and here I am. And also, we talk a lot about resilience and how things people have to overcome. I've had to employ lots of resilience in my career, but never because somebody thought I couldn't do the job because of my gender. And we should read the book. Men should read the book to see the kind of things that we are forcing upon women that we don't have to.
Yeah. Well, and those men who are tough and assertive, they're often referred to as leaders, right, Jane? I mean, not just demanding. It's like that guy should be in charge.
Well, and I think that's why the book has a pink cover, okay? Quite honestly, once again, drawing on my corporate experience, the men, and they were trying to help me, but got to be tough. Thick skin, tough. You know what? No. And I don't wear that well. I'm not tough. I am kind. I am soft. The image that I teach my students, all of my students, men and women, I want you to have a strong backbone and a soft heart. Because when you're tough, you can't feel the good and you can't feel the bad. No. You have a strong backbone and a soft heart. And what I try to get across with this book is a style. You can be powerful and you can be kind. You can be strong and you can be compassionate. They are not mutually exclusive. And you don't have to be nasty to be a leader.
Yeah. You kind of alluded to this at the beginning of our conversation, Jane, when we were talking to you about this male-dominated industry where you worked. But can a problem be that women face issues from other women, too? I mean, this is not only from men.
Sad but true. And in fact, the last section of the book is Find Your Fangirls. And now I've expanded to Find Your Fan Club. But one of my favorite quotations, and Hannah can speak to this, because I always find it fascinating when I talk to the student athletes, which topic do you want first? And it was, her success does not threaten mine. That's Lisa Turquist. And Jane Soyka adds, we are all on our own path. And instead of a culture of competition and scarcity, which was what it was in the corporate world, you had one woman and I was it. Okay, so I won, but everybody else lost. It is, there are plenty of opportunities to go around, plenty of awards, plenty of jobs. Her success does not threaten mine. We are all on our own path. And so but we have to be taught. Well, how do you support other women? And so in the book, I have several examples, but I had to learn it myself. I had to learn it, and I had to intentionally do it because I don't think we're taught how to support other women.
Yeah.
Hannah, it's a game changer.
Hannah, do you want to weigh in on that?
Absolutely. And I think when you think of athletics and college athletics especially, there's X amount of spots on the team, X amount of people get to be in that spot, but there are way more people on a team that can fill that team. So there is a lot of like innate competition between the team, but thinking outside of the number of spots on the starting line, for my instance, my team was so excellent in rallying behind other people and sharing in their successes that we really pulled ourselves up while other people were rising. And a great point that is being mentioned by Greg, Emily, Jane, is that show of like allyship and encouraging one another on day to day to give people the recognition and credit in the spaces where maybe their value isn't seen. So in the workplace, for me, that's always making sure that I'm shouting out people that are doing good work in meetings that they're not a part of. When I was a student athlete, that looked like if I'm not towing a line with a teammate on a certain race, I'm making sure that they know how they supported me and the team when I get off the start line and then I finish that race. That feeling of allyship and showing up for one another in all capacities, even though sometimes it could be a little hard when you really want that spot and you're not the person, being a fangirl, a champion in the fan club of someone is just as important.
Yeah. Emily, what are the big lessons from Jane's class that you use every day in your life now as a professional?
Oh my God, there's too many, truly. You know, I think to start, I really learned about advocacy for Jane, not only for myself, but for other people, right? And Hannah definitely touched on this as well. You know, first and foremost, your number one advocate needs to be yourself. And that comes to play when, you know, I have been called out before from a fellow male counterpart for maybe being a little bit too direct in a meeting, right? Exactly what we were just talking about. And, you know, it's my position to kind of stand up for myself there and really, you know, make sure that I'm positioning myself and supporting myself in the way that I deserve and that I'm worth. Another thing too, in terms of advocacy, is negotiating, right? Jane taught me, negotiate every single salary that you get. There's always a little bit more on the table, right? Whether it's in your compensation or it's other benefits that you're able to negotiate, but always do that. And, you know, I'm in the place now in my career that I've moved up quite quickly. I think because of a lot of these things that Jane has taught me. I think a few other things is just like simple tactic, like verbiage language things that she taught us, like in writing emails, instead of saying, I'm sorry for my delayed response, instead just saying like, thanks for your patience, and then moving on with your email, or avoiding the word just, because it makes, you know, saying something like, oh, I just wanted to follow up, you know, it kind of diminishes a little bit what you're actually trying to follow up on, right? So language, and then lastly, she taught me the infamous Jane Soika power pose, which is essentially, you know, you may not feel confident every day of your life, but you're still going to need to show up and, you know, lead and kind of convey confidence to other people, because that's, you know, what other people want to see. And so she always taught us, like, a couple minutes before you go on stage or before you go into a meeting, just go into the bathroom, look at yourself in the mirror and kind of stand in this like superwoman power pose. And really manifest that you are superwoman. And as like kind of cliche and silly as that sounds, like it truly works to stand there for more than a minute and manifest exactly, you know, what you want to do going into that next thing during your day.
We have a lot of heads nodding in agreement in the studio here as you talk about the power pose and not saying sorry and all those things. This has been wonderful.
And technically, the power pose was Amy Cuddy. So okay. I want to make sure that we give credit where credit is due.
Yes. Another one of the lessons. I've been talking with UC marketing professor and author of the book, Women in Power, Your Guidebook to Risk, Resilience, and Confidence, Jane Ziegler-Soyka, director of UC's Corporate Law Center, Neil Taylor, and two UC graduates, Hannah Markle and Emily McDonough. Thank you all so much for your time today. Jane will be signing copies of her book April 25th at Joseph Beth Booksellers. You can find a link with more information at WVXU.org. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director today is Ella Rowan. If you miss our program live, you can find Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening.